Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. Seth Merrow in the studio. Thanks for joining us today. Kind of Churchill-centric and deservedly so on a really great stakes day down at Churchill Downs. A little bit later on, taped an interview yesterday with Greg Foley, trainer Greg Foley. He has Obesos in the Matt Wynn today. Sconson won last week. We'll cover all of that and much, much more coming up a little bit later on. But we're going to kick things off looking over some stakes action with the paddock commentator down at Churchill, Joe Kristofek. And Joe had our buddy Brian Netto on before, just the handicapper's report we just wrapped up. He said to say hello. I will add my hello to you. Good morning.
Hello back to you guys. And it is a good morning. It's cooled off considerably here in Louisville overnight. We got some rain yesterday. The tilt is good. It's not going to affect the way you handicap the races. Just make sure you do realize that we are in lane three today. The track is fast, and temperatures are only going to be in the upper 50s, which is great for the horses, and light jacket weather for people.
Very good. I was going to check on the weather because I know there was a little weather yesterday, but I looked at the scratch page today, and it looked like turf is listed as good currently, correct?
Yeah, turf is listed as good, and I think it'll remain that way for the card. There is a little dampness in the air. Like I said, I wouldn't let it overly affect your handicapping when you're looking at these grass races.
Sounds good. And just before we get underway, before we went on the air, I heard you talking to some people in the office about the nuts and bolts of TV a little bit later. I want to give my personal, I'll say it to you. I've said it to other people over the past month or so, but my personal tip of the cap to you and the folks down at Churchill, and you were doing some of the fairgrounds too. I think the addition of the, what is it, the best bet, the best value, and the favorite I'm against, I love that. And the market mover, whoever came up with that, great idea.
I really appreciate you saying that. We've been doing the signature plays for, I don't know, the better part of the last couple of years. And, you know, we've got to pick every race every day, Seth. So I think it's important to give the people an idea of who your best bet is. You know, the horse you really want to sink your teeth into. It could be a horse that you want a single and multi-race wagers, or a 5-to-1 shot that you're really looking forward to zeroing in on, and then your best long shot of the day. And then the favorites you're against, I mean, that's valuable as well, because this game is all about opinions. And if you don't like favorites, that can be just as big of an advantage, if not a bigger advantage, than actually liking a horse in any given race. And the market movers have been great. I mean, they've been very productive. We had a 7-to-1 winner in the last race yesterday. You know, looking at the toad action when it comes to the daily double pick three will pays relative to the morning line, and how horses open up live in the toad board as well. And I think it's just another good piece of information for the player out there to try to piece together the puzzle.
I'm right with you. All of those factors. When you guys do the, you know, best bet, best value, favorite, I always go through my PPs, see how my thoughts match up with those. And every race when the market mover is announced, I look and see where I have that one in the mix as well. So, again, tip of the hat there. All right, let's jump in and get some stakes thoughts for this afternoon on a really great stakes card. Oh, and we mentioned it on the handicapper's report, but I'll let you tout it again. You have a couple of nice wagers today with the mandatory and a carryover in the late pick five, correct?
Yeah, so the Derby City 6 is going to be a force out today. We had a full carryover from yesterday to today. We dodged a couple bullets as far as, you know, solo tickets both Thursday and Friday. That's $150,000-plus just in the carryover, but they're going to bet at least $500,000 into it, and it's all got to go today. So if you have a winning ticket, you're going to get that $150,000 free on top of the money that's bet in. So if you're a horse player and you don't take advantage of that, especially with six stake races, you're nuts. Pick five, same kind of deal, set $73,000 of free money, final five races of the day, and there's actually a little carryover in the high five in the finale of 5,300 as well. A fast track, great races. I mean, horses that everybody's familiar with. I mean, you really need to sink your teeth into this card.
Yeah, this is definitely a great card today with the wagering opportunities. And as you say, the stakes and the performers themselves. And let's jump into it with the Blame. While we talk, I'm going to pull up a replay from the Ben Ali at Keeneland. We're going to watch number 5, Silver Dust, get it done over number 3, Night Ops. They're both back on Saturday afternoon. I'm tilting towards Silver Dust. I thought Sprawl might be a little bit interesting as well off the optional claiming win last time. But again, we're watching Silver Dust get it done over Night Ops in the stake at Keeneland. What are your thoughts in the Blame this afternoon?
Yeah, so I made a killing in the Ben Ali when Silver Dust was 9-2. I couldn't believe he was that place in a 5-horse field. I was at Fairgrounds all winter, as you know, Seth, and they ran him in a turf race, you know, just basically to get a race in him. There's no races for Silver Dust in the dirt at Fairgrounds unless you're going to tackle, you know, the really good horses in the Classic, and he wasn't ready to do that. So to give him the turf prep, he guts out a victory in the Ben Ali at a big price in the slop. He's well done on the outside here with tactical speed. His record at Churchill is 2-10, but he's been keeping some of the best company here. Third in last year, Stephen Foster. He was a close second in the Lucas Classic. I mean, when he's running at Churchill, he's running against the best, and he fits extremely well in this race today. So I'm going to give him a slight edge. I think Sprawl has a chance, but I think he's going to be overbet. I think he's going to be a little bit dressed up off of that sloppy track win against Allowance Company last out. He's in the best form of his career. There's no question about it. Whether or not he can repeat that effort on fast dirt against this caliber of competition remains to be seen. He was a close fourth in the Ben Ali, but that was also over a sloppy track.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting. And I'm glad you brought up turf race that started the season, because after the win in Keeneland last time, Brett Calhoun did say, hey, we just had to get a race into him. So that's one you can kind of look at with that on the record so far this year. The last race certainly is more indicative of what we might look for on Saturday afternoon. The Shawnee comes up, race number 7. And again, that kicks off that late pick 5 with the carryover, and people love those pick 5 carryovers. So I think that'll balloon up nicely. I'm going to pull up a replay from an allowance optional claimer at Oaklawn back in April. The number 2, Miss Bigley, will be the winner. I'm going to tilt towards Miss Bigley. En Voutant, out of the second from behind She Dares the Devil last time, clearly the one to beat. But I also thought Ishtan Council could be an interesting player at a little bit of a price as well, coming in from Oaklawn. Your thoughts on the Shawnee?
This is a glorified optional claiming race outside of En Voutant. I mean, he's supposed to win this race. Paris Light, you know, we see the Paris Lights from last year. She can give her a run for her money, but, you know, she ran well at Aqueduct and then was no factor in the La Troyana, a race where En Voutant ran her eyeballs out. She's got a pocket trip against She Dares the Devil. She Dares the Devil might be the most underrated horse in the country. You can talk about the upper echelon of that group, you know, the Monomoy girls and, you know, Kenny McPeak's horse, why is her name escaping me right now? The other Daredevil, Swiss Skydiver. But En Voutant, you know, she ran great in the Azari. She ran better in the Lotsland. She's got a great post here in a race that doesn't have a lot of speed. I agree with you, Miss Bigley. She's gotten some good reports on the local works reports that Bruno DiGiulio uses. Should be a monster price, obviously, in this race with En Voutant. Some even money. But, you know, for pick 5 purposes, if En Voutant doesn't win, neither do I. I might use some other horses as B's and C's, but she's going to be the solo way for me.
Yeah, clearly the one to beat. The Regret on the grass, race number 8, 3-year-old fillies. I'm going to pull up, again, an allowance event going back to May 8th at Churchill. The number 10 is going to be Gam's Mission. I said it on the handicapping show earlier. I think the Cherie DeVoe trainee is just kind of primed to step into stakes company off the first 3 starts, a couple of wins most recently, and we're watching the most recent one with Gam's Mission. So I'm going to tilt in that direction. I have Oyster Box in the next spot, and I may regret it. Spanish Love Affair for Mark Cassie probably is the one to beat, but I was taking a little pop against. What are your thoughts on the Regret?
Yeah, I'm glad you pulled up the Gam's Mission race, because I like the horse that ran second behind her, Flown. She's one of my best bets of the day, actually. She came back in the Appalachian and ran 5th, a very even race at 28-1, but Joust got loose and lonely on the lead that day. Gift Lift came back and won the stake Derby week here at Churchill. So I'm not going to hold that race off the bench against her. And then she ran a huge second last out. She had a claustrophobic trip. She rallied six wide. She was off field. And Gam's Mission simply got the jump on her, as you can see in the video that you're showing here, Seth. I think Sloan takes another big step forward. You know, you're not going to say that Ricardo Santana Jr. is an upgrade on Tyler Gaffalione, but he will get Sloan into the race in a race that doesn't have a lot of speed. I think he's going to have her in perfect position. I think the price will be square enough. I also like a bomb in the race, Money for Roe with Drayden Van Dyke for Brian Lynch. Third in the Gam's Mission race last out. That horse got pinched back at the start, lost five lengths with seven wide in the turn, and only got beat a length. Former $35,000 maiden claimer, but she proves she belongs with this kind, and she should get a good inside trip, and she's going to fly way under the radar in what is honestly anybody's race.
Yeah, I like it. All right, let's move on to the Matt Wynn Grade 3 for the three-year-olds going a mile and a 16th, and typically this is one of those races where horses were maybe a little bit behind for the Triple Crown or need to kind of hit the reset button, but horses that run well here typically make a little noise moving forward throughout the summer in the three-year-old division, and I think that will be the case for the horse I'm tilting towards. I went back to the Oaklawn on May 1st at Oaklawn Park. Number four, as we watch the replay, will be Folsom for Brad Cox, and I think if Folsom can put this stake that we're watching together with a win in the Matt Wynn, as I say, could be a player in the division as the summer moves forward. Clearly, the horses that will take attention are the two coming out of the Kentucky Derby, Obesos and Helium. Your thoughts on the Matt Wynn?
Yeah, what I find interesting, and obviously Greg was loaded in the three-year-old division, and he does like to start his young horses on turf when he thinks they're two turn horses because there's more opportunities to do so. But this horse ran on turf four consecutive times and was intended for turf at Keeneland, won in the flop, and won that Oaklawn Invitational in a really gutsy performance. I didn't have the cleanest of trips that day. I think the horse got warrant that ran second is a very nice horse moving forward. There's a lot of talk about Folsom in this race. I just wonder why the horse didn't get on dirt a little bit sooner. Another popular opinion that I love hearing people talk about is that Obesos is an out-the-back closer. He does not have to be an out-the-back closer. They did that by design in the Louisiana Derby. They did that by design in the Kentucky Derby, and he actually raced mid-pack in the Kentucky Derby and made a little bit of a middle move. I think you're going to see Obesos a lot closer to the early pace than a lot of people would guess in here. He's going to need to be. There's not a lot of speed in this race, but I think he's the most talented horse in the field. I love that people are opposing him. Not necessarily going to be a single for me in this race, but like I said, I do expect him to be closer to the early pace, and I do think he's the best horse in the field.
Yeah, and as I say, I did an interview with Greg Foley that we'll show next, and I think he's feeling pretty good about Obesos. But I will say in the Aristides, the last stake we'll hit on here, he sounded really high on Bango. I didn't use Bango in my mix, but I may be reconsidering. I'm going to pull up the Tampa Sprint Stake from back in March. Tapito Win is going to be the winner there, the number five horse. I subsequently had Mark Cassie on, and coming out of this race, he was really high on Tapito Win. Now, faltered after the fast pace in the Churchill Downs last time, but cuts back to the six. I'm going to tilt in that direction, but as I say, I may have to take an extra look at Bango. Your thoughts on the Aristides?
What a great race. Tremendously wide open race. Bango loves Churchill Downs, obviously, the 4 for 7. He ran his eyeballs out in the grade one last time. It was a fast pace. It was a contested pace. He actually had a clear lead in the stretch. Just could not sustain that bit. And I can understand why people like him. I'm going to go to a bomb here. I like the number two, Tough Love. This horse was third two starts back to Strike Power at Oaklawn. The race prior to that, he had trouble at Oaklawn. His races at Churchill have been good. You'll notice the fourth against Bango back in November, a race in which he was hung out four wide from an outside post. If you watch the replay of his last race going 7 furlong stud, you'll think at the top of the stretch he has no chance to win. He was absolutely blocked on the turn. He was checked. He rallied off field. It was a relentless rally. He got up to beat Haunts, who's also involved in this race. He's 10-1. He's got Corey Lannery. There's some speed, I think, to run at in here. Corey rode him last time, got to know the horse, and I expect similar strategy from him in this one. Tough Love at 10-1. That's a horse that I'm certainly going to be playing and utilizing in the multi-race wagers in race number 10.
I like it. So there were some thoughts on the stakes action on a really great card today. Again, a mandatory pay in the Derby City 6. Carryover going into the late pick 5, which is all stakes as well. So a lot of fun today. But, Joe, before we let you go, I want to hit on tomorrow as well, because Eskin Ford back for Brilliant Racing, your racing partnership. Whenever we have you on, we like to get a little update on Brilliant Racing. And as I texted back and forth with you the past couple of days, I got an update that new partnerships are forming. The website, brilliant horseracing.com, people can visit there. And I know we have some locals involved, and we always root for the locals when they have horses racing. So we look for Brilliant Racing horses to get it done. And while you update us a little bit, I'm going to pull up the May 8th race for Eskin Forrett, which was his last race. He'll run third in here. Eskin Forrett will be the number 5. But I'll tell you, at the top of the stretch, I thought, oh, he's got a shot to win. And then I thought, definite second. And then just got caught a little bit late. But it was a nice performance from your horse last time out. Talk a little bit about, and again, update us on Brilliant Racing and where you're sitting with the partnership right now.
Yeah, he's a funny horse. I think he's earned $110,000 of his $120,000 in his bankroll at Churchill. He hates everywhere else. He absolutely hated Turfway. His form was completely darkened by those two terrible performances. And I was worried, Seth. He was under a drive at the 3/16 post in the race you're watching, and I'm like, man, he's going to go the wrong direction. But he just kept trying and trying and trying. Thought he might win, then he gave up second late because he just couldn't simply sustain that bid. He's in a non-winners at 3/40 tomorrow at his favorite track, and he fits the race. So we got to try to turn the tables on the horse that beat us last time. But no matter what happens with this horse, we're very proud of them, and we expect a good performance tomorrow. The new partnership is going to open in a couple weeks. We're going to do yearlings this year. In addition to that, we're probably going to buy into a horse that's in training or claim something just so the partners have some action. But we just think there's better value in the yearlings. We think we have an opportunity to kind of bolt those pieces of clay to our design and not buy a two-year-old in training that's kind of already beat up by the time it gets your hands on the horse. So we're going to try something a little bit different. And, yeah, we've won 20% of our races since July. Yes, the Avengers won 4 times. We had Template win a couple times. He got claimed from us. So it's been a journey, and that's what this is all about. And it's a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah, as I say, there are some locals involved, I know, and, you know, just from watching other partnerships, particularly up at Saratoga, where I can sit there and watch them live, it's a lot of fun for folks who want to get involved in the game. And you make new friends, and there's camaraderie, and rooting your horse down the stretch, there's nothing like it. And if they get in the winner's circle, even better. So, again, I'll tout the website, brilliant horseracing.com, if you want to find out more about Joe's partnership and perhaps get involved. Joe, as always, we appreciate the visit. Good luck this afternoon. We'll talk again.
Yeah, and if you want more information on the partnership, don't be afraid to hit me up on Twitter, hit me up on, you know, Facebook, any way that you can get in touch with me, get in touch with me through Seth. And everybody enjoy the races today. It doesn't get much better from a wagering perspective or from a racing perspective than what we're going to see at Churchill Downs. And we'll be here through the end of June, and looking forward to the day and the rest of the meet. And really appreciate the plug for Brilliant, Seth, and love being on with you guys.
Happy to do it. Happy to have you on. Joe Kristovec, paddock commentator from Churchill Downs, on a big upcoming Saturday afternoon down in Louisville. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a moment with Greg Foley.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the clubhouse racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
The Capital Region has some of the most sophisticated horse racing fans in the country. That's why Capital OTB built the Clubhouse Racebook. Here you can wager year-round on the best horse racing from around the world. The Clubhouse also has monthly promotions including live bankrolls, handicapping contests, and so much more. Like sports? Watch your favorite teams on more than 30 screens in Legends Field Sports Grill. Food, sports, and the excitement of championship horse racing only at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku.
The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now. Happy to be joined now by trainer Greg Foley. He has Obesos in the mat win on Saturday. We'll also recap a nice stakes win from last weekend as well. Greg, good morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Happy to have you. And as I say, we'll talk a little Obesos. He comes up on Saturday at Churchill in the mat win, grade three event, mile and 16th. We're going to go back and look at the stretch run to the Louisiana Derby. Obesos is going to be the number eight horse here. Hot Rod Charlie wins. Midnight Bourbon runs second, and Obesos runs third. Nice performance in the Louisiana Derby. It was a nice winter season down at the fairgrounds. Started things off with a couple of wins, the Maiden Breaker in the first condition, the fourth in the Risen Star. And again, we're watching now this nice third-place finish in the Louisiana Derby. Talk about how he progressed down in New Orleans this winter.
Well, yeah, he really did. We had a good win with him at the fairgrounds. Broke his maiden there at the first time we ran him there. Of course, sprinting. Came back win the AON same way. You know, he came from well off the pace both races and just exploded down the stretch and won very, very easy. And, there weren't a lot of options for a horse like that after they won two races, a three-year-old. And that's kind of the decision. He was doing great, and we took a shot in the Risen Star. And he ran a credible race, ran good, and flattened out just a little bit. Wanted to be a little keen early in that race. Was a little aggressive, but still ran a good, very good race against some good horses. I mean, Mandaloon, Proxy, Midnight Bourbon, they're all some of the top three-year-olds. Well, they are top three-year-olds as right now even. But then, you know, I was a little hesitant about going into Louisiana to run the Louisiana Derby because of his lack of finish in that race, and to stretch him out even further, which Louisiana Derby being a mile and 3/16. But we came back and worked him, and he worked great and galloped out terrific. And Pedroza was on him for the Risen Star and came back and worked him again. And he just great. This horse will run long. I think he couldn't have went any better. Don't be afraid to run him, Louisiana Derby. And anyway, we went ahead and run him, and we went into the race with nothing to lose. Just the only thing I told him, Pedroza, I want you to sit. I want him to gallop around there basically a good mile and run down. I want him running down the stretch. I don't care if we win, lose, run last, middle of the pack, whatever. I want him running at the end of the race, whatever happens. And he did, and he rode a great race, and that's what he did. And he come rolling and gets beat a knob for just a inch per second, just running over the second horse, which was Midnight Bourbon. And galloped out in front of Hot Rod Charlie the time they got around the first turn or before they hit the 7/8 pole middle of the first turn galloping out. And he's gotten better every race he's ever run, just learning and just maturing. And he's a nice colt.
And talk a little bit about the Derby performance, because I'm guessing you had to be happy with that. Fifth in a field of 19. This is still a lightly raced horse. That was only his sixth career start. So again, the fifth in the Kentucky Derby, I think, was a very nice performance.
He did run a good race. I was proud of his race. I tell you the truth, I was a little disappointed. I love my horse. I thought we could be on the board. He ran a big race. And he flattened out just a little bit the last 50 yards. He got bumped around out of the gate, the first 50 yards out of the gate. He got bumped around pretty good, and it made him jump up into the bridle and got a little aggressive. If you watch a rerun, you'll see him, and he kind of takes off with the jockey, you know, not bad, but he did. And I think it took away from his punch. And time he got around the first turning down the backside, he relaxed. He threw his ears up, and we were fine. Had a beautiful trip after that, saved all the ground. And top of the lane, the eighth hole, he made me stand up. I mean, I always said I wanted to feel, wanted to know what it felt like to think you had a shot to win the Kentucky Derby. And he gave me that because I thought we had a big shot to win from the eighth hole. And because he come running and, but at that last 16th, the last 50 yards or so, he didn't stop, but he hung a little bit. But I think that first part of the race, again, took away from his late kick. He just, but anyway, I was proud of him. He showed up, he ran his race, and he's a really nice colt.
Yeah, as I say, only six career starts, and he's playing with the big boys in that three-year-old division. And I'm curious, coming out of a decent finish in the Kentucky Derby, you at least had to consider, maybe only briefly, but I think you probably had to consider the Preakness. So what was the thought process to skip the Preakness and aim for Saturday's Matt Wynn?
Well, the Preakness, he was tired after the Derby for a day or two. It drew him up just a little bit, his weight. And the Preakness, I just, you know, the first day, that's not, no way we're going there. You know, the Belmont, we talked about some in that. But, you know, it's, again, mile and a half. And I don't know that he wants to really go that far. I'm not saying he wouldn't. But I wouldn't be afraid to run him in the Belmont. But I just, you know, I want to be smart with him. I want to make some money with him. And the Matt Wynn was a last-minute actually decision to go in that race. It came up kind of light field that. But Ben Huffman came up to me Sunday, actually, just said, you know, they were afraid they were going to get four, five, six horses in it. They wound up getting, what, eight or whatever. Anyway, the horse doing good. And I had the Ohio Derby slated for him really to be his next start. And we're sitting here at home. He's ready to go. Instead of working a bunch of times in between now and the Ohio Derby, which that's not till late June, June 26th, I believe. I said, hey, let's might as well run him. You know, it's a grade three, 100 and a half. Here right at home, can walk him out of his stall. He's doing good. I think he'll be hard to beat tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm looking at the last couple of workouts, very nice. And just tell us what he's been like in the morning and what you expect Saturday from him.
He's trained great. You know, we worked him Monday, which was a day or two later. That's how late we decided to go in this race. And Pedroza came and worked him, and I just told him, we may be going to go in this Matt Wynn race. Just go easy half. I don't want to let him gallop out too, you know, a nice gallop out, but not, I don't want to do anything crazy. I don't need him going in 59 or galloping out and you know, anything real, real fast. And he worked great. He went 49, I think, galloped out 101, 114 and changed. He went plenty quick enough and came off the track like he did nothing. And he's fit. He's ready to go. And we'll see what happens.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Coming out of the fifth in the Derby, I think he's in a good spot on Saturday. Also want to mention in the Aristides, you have Bango on Saturday. Yep. And I'd like a thought on that one because I pulled up a replay. And I went back to last November, and this replay of Bango is from Churchill Downs at 6 furlongs. So that's the scenario for Saturday as well, 6 furlongs at Churchill Downs. So I wanted to pull up this nice win for Bango. Bango's going to be the number 3 horse here as we watch the replay. Get up by a chart margin of a couple lengths, a little over a couple of lengths. So, again, has shown an affinity for the track and the distance. Comes off a 6th-place finish last time in the Churchill Downs, but that was at 7 furlongs. You looking forward to the cut back to 6 on Saturday?
I love Bango. He ran a huge race Derby Day. Like you just said, he loves Churchill. He's 4 for 7 at Churchill Downs, the second to third, quarter of a million. Absolutely, he thrives at Churchill. And, you know, if the Churchill Downs grade one Derby Day would have been 6, 6.5, he gallops. He wins by 3. And they just got him the last 50 yards. You know, 7/8 is pushing him a little. He really didn't want to do 7/8, but I think he's going to be hickory to Mark going 3/4 of a mile.
Yeah, I like that. And, go ahead.
You know, and it's, I think, quite a bit easier competition than he was in last time. I mean, you had, you know, you're missing Flagstaff, Whitmore, and those horses aren't in the race. But, I mean, it's still plenty tough enough race. I'm not taking anything away from anybody, but I like him tomorrow. I really do.
Very good. And I certainly had to go back to last week because in the winning colors last Saturday, you had Sconson. We're going to watch the replay here and talk about facing some horses. You were going up against Frank's Raquette. We had the stakes preview last week, and we said, you know, Frank's Raquette may be the one to beat, but Sconson is probably the alternative. Boy, she certainly was. Sconson, the number 4 horse here. The chart margin winds up to be 3.25. Rising Sea second. Frank's Raquette winds up 3rd in there. But you had to be thrilled last week with the performance by Sconson.
No, I sure was, but I wasn't surprised at all. She's a running hussy. She's a good filly, man. And, you know, she just ran 2nd the race before Derby Day to Gamine, you know, and made her run. I thought we had her up at the eighth pole Derby Day, and she got away with a 23 first quarter Gamine, and just there was no pace in the race at all to soften her up a little bit, you know, but could have gave us a little bit of help. And, you know, you maybe not, still don't beat her, but she made her run anyway. Then she came back and showed up and ran a race last Saturday. But again, she's a big, strong, beautiful filly, and she's kind of like Bango. She loves Churchill Downs, Wisconsin. Her record's great here at home too.
Yeah, 3/5 now at Churchill. But I have to ask, we're up in the Saratoga area. Have you looked at the book for Saratoga? Might we see her up here? I mean, we have the Honorable Miss on July 28th at 6. We have the Ballerina on August 28th at 7. It seems like 6 or 7 are right in her wheelhouse. Any chance we'll see Sconson up here at Saratoga?
I think there's a really good chance you'll see us up there. We're going to run her. They have one more race here at home, and it's just an overnight stake, but just because she loves Churchill so much, and the Roxalina late June here, it's going 6.5. We're gonna go there, and maybe probably just freshen her just a tad. And that Ballerina race is the one I really want to shoot for, the 7/8, and that ought to hit her dead center, man.
7/8, a little grade 1 maybe on the resume. Yeah, we're looking forward to it. So we'll look forward to you up here. I want to go back to that race last week, though, and just ask some nuts and bolts on the training side of the game. I'm always interested in that kind of thing. The race, it was a nighttime card, Downs After Dark, last week, and that meant that the race went off just before 8 o'clock at night. We always hear about horses being creatures of habit. How do you change things up and get them geared up and ready to go for a race at 8 p.m. when normally they'd probably be asleep?
Well, you know, it is a little tough on those horses. Like you said, they are creatures of habit. They know when their feed time is. Like her, we went ahead and fed everybody pretty much on their night feed, which we set them in around 4:30. And we did feed the same times and gave her just a handful just to try to fool her a little bit, you know, she handled everything good. She was a little on the muscle in the paddock that day, a little bit, had me a little worried, matter of fact. She didn't get hot or anything, but she was a handful to I wound up taking her myself, actually, after we got her saddled and gave her a round or two around the paddock, and She knew what time it was. She was ready to go. But once she got on the track, she calmed right down, and then she was okay.
Yes, yeah, she certainly was okay. No question about that.
Going warming up and going to the gate, she was good. Tyler said she was, once she got on the track, she settled down, and she didn't get fat or anything. But she was a little more keyed up. She had me thinking about it, worried me a little bit anyway. But she was. It worked out.
Yeah, it certainly did. And speaking of last Saturday night, and going back a couple weeks to Derby, you're, you know, based down there at Churchill. I'm just curious. We're in that period where things are transitioning vis-a-vis the pandemic, and I'm just curious, from a horseman's perspective, what's it been like the past few weeks having fans back on the grounds at Churchill?
Just the past few weeks, Aaron?
Yeah, with the fans.
Everything's been pretty much back to normal, you know, this year. A lot more so than last year. It was so crazy. You know, I mean, when we first got back, everybody came back in. They were still taking the temperatures and checking you and that. And then since Derby has been over, they took all that they're not doing that anymore. You know, it was a lot more like normal. And with the Derby and everything versus last year, you know, running in September and no crowd, it was certainly very different compared to this year. It was like the real thing this year. You know, they had a good crowd Derby day and more way it's supposed to be.
Yeah, and is it more fun for you? I'm guessing, like last Saturday night, I saw pictures and it looked like they had a nice crowd for that Downs After Dark. So it's got to be a little more fun to win with a cheering crowd in attendance.
Yeah, they did have a good crowd Saturday night. And yeah, it's all, you know, you got people there, and we had a lot of owners and that in for the race, and it was a fun night.
Just before I let you go, I always like to introduce viewers to trainers and get some background so they can learn a little more about a trainer. And I was reading up last night a little bit, and you got into the game. You've been in the game your whole life, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. My dad, Drabo Foley, he trained, and we were on the backside in diapers. Really were, you know. Yeah, I mean, that's the truth. Yeah.
And then it's gone to your kids as well. I guess your kids assist for you, and it sounded like, I actually saw an interview, and one of your kids said, yeah, I used to get a little backpack put on, and my dad would put in like an orange soda, and I'd go hang out at the barn all day. It sounded like they've been at it in diapers too.
Well, yeah, not like me. I kind of steered them away, actually, when they were young, and that they were big in sports, both Alex and Travis. They were excellent high school basketball players, and Alex, golfer. He actually played college golf, and they, you know, they all, I wanted them to get through school, and they both did, both got degrees and all that, and it kind of surprised me that they've come back to the, want to be with the horses and that, but they have, and they're doing great, and, you know, that's kind of what they decided they wanted to do. I said, you know, just as long as you get a want to do it and love to do it, and they found their way back over here.
Yeah, I read your son Travis has an MPA. Congratulations to him. That's an accomplishment. But your father, when I was reading, and you mentioned his name, Drevo. That's a great name. Where's the name come from? Do you know?
Yeah, actually, it is Dravo. Drevo. You've never heard that one too many times. It was his mother named him after the doctor that delivered him. that's the story that I got. He had a special name, Drevo Green. Green's his middle name. Drevo Green. That's my middle name. And they laid that handle on me, my middle name, Gregory Drevo.
Very good. Like I say, it's something you see out of a novel or something. And he was actually, from what I read, he started his career as a jockey and then transitioned over to becoming a trainer. Were you ever able to see him as a jockey, or had he already become a trainer by that time?
Yeah, he was a jock when he was very young, and he got hurt bad in a really bad spill, and that killed him, really. They cut a piece of his lung out, and that ended jockey career, and he galloped horses for a man named Herb Stevens in Lexington there for a couple of years, was like assistant trainer and galloped horses for him, and then wound up going out on his own. And I never got to see him ride. He was training, and we were always with him when we were young. My sister, I've got three sisters, all of us at the tracks there. And he was, my dad was excellent. Very good horseman, excellent horseman. He won a lot of races. You know, he was a good a horseman eyes around.
And you mentioned sisters. For folks who watch Kentucky racing, they might see recognize the name Vicki Foley as well, your sister. And just as I was reading last night, she trained, of course, Hog Creek Hustle. We were down covering the Belmont Stakes a couple of years back when Hog Creek Hustle won the Woody Stevens. So I was there for that performance. And I read that you were involved in finding the horse at an auction, correct?
Yeah, he was bought at the as a yearling at the September sale. And, yeah, the owner, Patty Tipton, and she kind of wanted me to look at some horses for, and he was one of them. And I said, that's one. And she had about 75 to 100 to spend. And I said, that's the horse you want to buy. If you can get him, I don't think 100 going to get him. You better go add a little to your pocketbook. And anyway, she wound up getting him, I think, for $125. And he's a nice horse. He's on the shelf right now. He had came out last race with a little dink, and but he's going to get some time and he'll be fine. He's just get a little break right now.
Yeah, he is certainly very talented, and put the grade one Woody Stevens on his resume, as they say. Greg, we really appreciate the time. Know it's always a busy time, and you have some stakes runners coming up tomorrow, but I wanted to preview those and go back and recap a little bit on Sconson last week. And we will certainly look for Sconson up in Saratoga. Maybe a little Obesos, maybe a little Jim Dandy for Obesos, perhaps?
Man, we're not going to say no on anything, sure. He belongs with, I think he proved Derby Day he belongs with those horses, so we'll see what happens.
Absolutely. Greg, wish you a lot of good luck on Saturday with the two stakes performers. And as I say, we'll be looking for Sconson up at Saratoga. Again, appreciate the time, and we'll talk again.
All right. Thanks again.
Appreciate it.
See you guys later.
Appreciate it. Greg Foley, Obesos, in the Matt Wynn on Saturday.
Welcome to Albany County, an incredible destination to live, work, and play, with easy connections to more than a dozen cities from our vibrant modern airport. It's a short trip downtown to a hive of culture and amusement, from world-class shows at the newly renovated Times Union Center to reliving the past at the New York State Museum. From outdoor recreation to shopping to nightlife, Albany County has something for everyone. We'll see you soon.
It's one of the richest days in horse racing. It's Belmont Stakes Day, and you don't want to miss a minute of the action. And with Capital OTB, you don't have to. With more than 60 Easy Bet and branch locations throughout upstate New York, the Clubhouse Racebook in Albany, and online wagering at CapitalOTBBet.com, you'll find everything you need to make Belmont Stakes Day your day. So watch, wager, and win at Capital OTB.
Having trouble finding us? It's actually quite simple. Whether online or on your TV, it's never been easier to watch and wager on championship horse racing with Capital OTB. Simply log on to CapitalOTBBet.com. There you can watch our morning shows, live stream races, and wager on our state-of-the-art wagering platform. You can also watch from the comfort of your home on Spectrum Cable Channel 1250 or Fios Channel 467. And win more with Capital OTB.
Welcome back, and again, thanks to trainer Greg Foley for joining us. We taped him yesterday, and I think he likes Banco in that Aristides. I'm going to have to take a look at that one. I think Obesos in the Matt Wynn, that's a clever spot as well, so we'll see. And Sconson, going to look for her potentially up at Saratoga in the Bell Arena. Again, I don't know that I'd ever talked to Greg before on the program, so it was kind of fun to plug him in and get some thoughts on today's stakes performers, and again, going last week to Sconson and more with Greg Foley. Do want to alert you to OTB news, and that includes tonight. We will be taking nighttime thoroughbred racing. Keep that in mind here on Capital OTB TV and certainly via CapitalOTBBet.com. Nighttime thoroughbreds available tonight via OTB. Also want to alert you that the next couple of days here at the Clubhouse Racebook, we do have some promos to take advantage of. If you swing down to the Clubhouse today, you can take advantage of the Naira Pick 4 and the Match Bet promotion. That's this afternoon here at the Clubhouse Racebook. And tomorrow at the Racebook, it's the Play the Board Handicapping Contest. It's a lot of fun. I I can't play officially, but I go out and get an entry sheet every Sunday and kind of fill it out. And last week, Mike Callahan informed me I would have won if I had been in the contest. So come on down and take advantage of the promotions today and or tomorrow here at the Racebook, 7-Eleven Central Avenue in Albany. Going to pull up, boy, we talked about it a bunch yesterday that the Penn National had their Penn Mile card. But with the weather here in the Northeast, it fell apart a little bit. Moving off the turf, but I did want to pull up the Penn Mile from yesterday. Annex, despite the surface switch, the Bill Mott trainee went off as the 9-5 favorite, winds up fourth. Again, this is a horse, Annex, who had never tried the dirt. The winner is going to be number one, Gershwin. Gershwin, as opposed to Annex, who had never tried the dirt, Gershwin had never been on the turf. So this was a horse with the surface switch that maybe had a little bit of an advantage and got it done as the 2-1 second choice. Gershwin gets it done over the King Cheek, Chess's Dream third, Annex fourth in the off-the-turf Penn Mile. Again, things kind of fell apart a little bit with the weather at Penn National last night. You hate to see that, you know, a track that has that kind of one big night a year or one big day a year or whatever, and weather kind of conspires against them a little bit, but that was the Penn Mile yesterday. Again, the off-the-turfer with Gershwin getting it done. Mike Stenham training for Godolphin. So, again, it kind of fell in their lap a little bit with the situation down there. Gershwin, as I say, had never tried the turf before. In four starts, had won the maiden breaker down at the fairgrounds over a muddy track, so had shown an affinity for an off track as well. Now Gershwin is 2-5 in the career, getting it done yesterday, 2-5, and adds a stakes race in the first stakes performance. So it kind of fell into his lap. Had some not just dirt experience, but off track experience, and it all comes together yesterday for a $300 purse in the Penn Mile for Gershwin. Talked about it a little bit on the handicapping show, and I have an answer to a question that Brian brought up on the handicapping show, and I wasn't sure, but the news came out within the past, 24, 48 hours that tickets are going on sale soon for the 2021 Saratoga season, and will be at pretty much full capacity. Just reading from the press release, NYRA to host fans at near full capacity based on current New York State health and safety guidelines for Saratoga. Free grandstand admission at Saratoga. Free grandstand general admission for all fans who show proof of vaccination with Excelsior Pass. That'll happen on opening day, so you can get in for free with an Excelsior Pass. Season and weekly ticket plans for the 2021 meet, which opens on Thursday, July 15th and continues through Labor Day, September 6th. They'll go on sale Wednesday, June 9th at the NYRA website. Season passes will also be available. Again, reading from the press release, in order to reopen Saratoga Racecourse to fans at near full capacity, NYRA will designate most sections for vaccinated fans only, including the popular Saratoga backyard. So essentially, you're going to be in better shape if you've got a vaccination than not. There will be some sections for non-vaccinated people that will have social distancing and mask wearing at this point. But most of the facility will be for vaccinated people and be full capacity. In addition to the historic and family-friendly backyard picnic area, sections that will be reserved exclusively for vaccinated fans and will operate at full capacity will include the 1863 Club. That's the new building, the relatively new building over on the clubhouse turn. Also the stretch, the turf terrace, the porch, clubhouse, and most of the stadium seats within the grandstand. A limited number of seating areas will be available for non-vaccinated fans who will be required to observe social distancing guidelines and wear a facial covering at all times during their day at Saratoga. But again, Brian brought up the point on the handicapper support. Do you have to have proof? How's that going to work of vaccination? And I wasn't sure, but that further down in the press release, actually, walk-up admission will be available daily and does not include reserve seating, which is the standard there. When you pay to go through the booth, that doesn't necessarily mean you have a seat. But Upon entry, fans must submit proof of vaccination by presenting the CDC COVID-19 vaccination record card or digitally through the New York State Excelsior Pass. So it looks like there will be some form of, here's my vaccination card or Excelsior Pass proof that will be required for getting in. So keep that in mind. It seems like Saratoga this season, if you want to take full advantage of the fun and the festivities, vaccination is the way to go. Belmont Stakes a week away. Mike Welch in New York doing his gig, looking at the workouts as he does going into the Kentucky Derby and whatnot. Mike does a great job. Some workers were out yesterday that he noted in the Daily Racing Forum. Rombauer. He was doing a maintenance-like 4 furlongs in 50.08 with new jockey John Velasquez on board. He cruised along easily while in company. Rombauer seemed to handle Big Sandy well while giving the horse and rider a chance to get acquainted a week out for the main event. So it seems like, according to Welch, nice workout for Rombauer yesterday. Known agenda has never been the type of horse, writes Mike Welch, to wow one in the morning. Friday's drill, however, may have been his best yet. So known agenda looked pretty good. Overturk, Took, and Bourbonic, also for Todd Pletcher, worked in company. Both were set down fairly aggressively to complete another full quarter mile down the home straight. So they had to work a little bit for those. Not surprising, really. They're grinders come from behind horses, and so that they had to work on them a little bit, not a shock. But it sounds like Rombauer, known agenda, looked pretty good. Out in Southern California, Rock Your World zipped 5 furlongs in 58.40. That was yesterday morning, according to the article by Steve Anderson in the Daily Racing Forum. Worked yesterday, a day before he was scheduled to be flown to New York for the Belmont. That means Rock Your World should be headed there, if not already there, today. I would think, though, timing-wise, probably arrives there sometime later today. Trainer John Sadler said of Rock Your World, he was impressive. Here we are a week out, and he looks good and bright. So Rock Your World also looking good in workouts yesterday. In addition to Saratoga full capacity, Del Mar has also announced they intend to allow 100% capacity in seating areas for their summer meeting. That one runs from July 16th to September 6th. As of now, face coverings will be required. A little bit different out in Southern California, however. Although, these kind of things change day to day, but we'll see. It looks like, though, at this point, Del Mar planning for essentially full capacity this summer as well. And Woodbine put out their stakes schedule. The Queen's Plate, as it was last year, run a little bit differently. The Queen's Plate will be August 22nd. You know, normally we're, June for the Queen's Plate, but as it was last year, August 22nd for the Queen's Plate. The Canadian International and the Canadian Stakes on September 18th. The Woodbine Oaks and the Plate Trial both work out as preps for the Queen's Plate. They're going to be August 1st. The rest of the Canadian Triple Crown, again, the Queen's Plate has that August date, August 22nd. The rest of the Canadian Triple Crown, the Prince of Wales at Fort Erie will be September 14th. And the Breeders' Stake moving back to Woodbine October 3rd. So again, like last year, and Canada's just been behind the eight ball a little bit with the pandemic. As things are easing here, they're a few months behind at best up in Canada. So whereas we kind of got back to normal with our Triple Crown up there, they're pretty much on the schedule they were last year with things being switched to a little bit later in the season. But the good news is, they are getting back to action up at Woodbine and throughout Canada on the racing side of things, because I'm sure it's been a tough road to hoe for the folks, owners and trainers and backstretch workers and whatnot, without racing and purse money to keep things going. I'm sure it's been very tough, but they will be back north of the border sooner rather than later. All right, I'm going to wrap it up for this edition of Racing Across America. Again, thanks a little bit earlier to Joe Christofek from Churchill Downs and trainer Greg Foley as well. As I say, it was a little bit of a Churchill-centric program with, deservedly, because they do have that great stakes card. Also, the Derby City Six at Churchill has a mandatory payout today, about $150,000 already in the pool. And the Late Pick Five at Churchill has about $73,000 in the carryover for the Late Pick Five as well. All stakes with both of those, as you see, the Derby City Six and that Late Pick Five. I'm sure there will be a lot of extra dough put into those pools today, so you want to take a look at those for this afternoon. We will be covering all of it on OTB Live, which will come back in about an hour and a half or so, 12:30-ish. We'll kick in for a Saturday afternoon. I'll take a look at a little Belmont, a little Churchill, and more on this Saturday afternoon. So we look forward to seeing you then. But as I say, I'm going to wrap it up for Racing Across America for another Saturday morning. I'm Seth Merrow. As always, appreciate your tuning in. Don't forget a couple of days of fun promotions down here at the Racebook over the next couple of days. Don't forget Monday, there's great racing, a New York Showcase Day down at Belmont on Monday. So keep that in mind as well. But we'll wrap it up, say goodbye for Racing Across America for this Saturday morning. And again, we'll see you in about an hour and a half or so with OTB Live.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off Track Betting.